Welcome back to Extra Features Interview. We have a great short film called Falsified with Ashley Tabaibabai. And I screwed it up. Go ahead, Ashley, go. I'm not going to do any better. So what progressed you to a short film?
Aside from insanity, no, I'm joking. I'm an actor first and foremost. I believe in making your own content, and you know, I started making stuff about 4 or 5 years ago, and this was just part of the natural evolution of the process. You know, I collaborated with other people who were part of the short in the past, kind of as a producer and acting in the project, but this was the first one where I kind of produced it, wrote it, and also acted in it. And it was a story that I was familiar with. It's inspired by these real events that happened in Spain over many decades, where they were stolen birth. And, you know, that was a pretty harrowing thing that I kept seeing stories about in the real press. And I just got intrigued by it and thought, you know, logistics is interesting and shocking, but nothing had really been covered on the humanity behind the story. So I was like, well, let's explore that, and it snowballs from there. As you know, it kind of just, next thing you know, you've made a short film and it's 2 years on.
Yeah, my question is, I've never heard of this. I had to wait for the final credits because I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of neat. So where you found this, in the newspaper or on the news or a book or?
I grew up in Spain. Like, I knew about it because of the proximity to the country. And what happened is, it was a really well-kept secret by Spain. And it came out in the press there around the late 2000s, where a couple of guys basically found out through their adoptive families that they'd been bought at birth, basically, and stolen. So, you know, the snowball went from there. But look, you're not the first one. You're probably not going to be the last. Like most people have said to me, I've never heard of this before. And I naively thought everybody had, just because I knew about it. So that's the irony, I think.
Well, we live in Canada, so I guess different things happen here than there, right? We're always on the native.
It's the same everywhere, though. It's the same everywhere, not just North America. Like in Europe, you know, outside of Spain, it's everyone. Like, I'm based out of the UK, and 99.9% of people here, same thing.
So what is your reaction to this film? I mean, this is some disturbing content once you know what's going on.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I feel like we've kept it reasonably open thematically and ambiguous and touched on a lot of things, but I think so far people are kind of putting their own spin on it based on, I guess, where they're at in their own lives and how they interpret the content, which is always great, right? You want a film to do that. Commonly, the feedback is what you said, like, I didn't know this was a real thing. And, you know, when we've played it in large audiences, it's usually quite subdued when the film finishes, because the rolling credits come and they kind of get hit with, it's inspired by real events, and they see the stats, and not everybody was expecting that. They just thought, oh, okay, interesting. Like, this guy, his son was stolen. He's been looking for him. It's an interesting narrative fiction. Then you get that, and it's like, wait, that's real? And a lot of people, I think, then go and do a bit of searching afterwards. Many people say they kind of apologize to me, like, oh, I'm so sorry I never heard of this. So, well, don't apologize to me or to anybody. It's just, it's one of those things. It's not being well exposed, and that wasn't our intention to shed light on things, but I guess if we are doing that, that's a nice bonus.
I have to disagree with you. I would say you're 100% shedding light on this, because I would have no idea this ever happened.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think that was, I mean, I know you made the film probably because you were interested in it, but I think you're definitely providing a service to people that see your film, like, wow, I didn't know that existed. And I think you're promoting awareness. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, thank you. I think it is, as we've gone through it, I've realized that is a big part of it. And yeah, to your point, it was never the intention. It's not an overtly political film. I think the politics speak for itself. Like, we don't have to do anything to push that. It's a story that's character driven about two fictional guys. And, you know, the backdrop happens to be the scandal. But because it is the scandal, I think, yes, it is kind of raising awareness for people. And, you know, I guess it's something that we're kind of grateful for and a bit of a blessing, even though we never planned it. So, yeah, it's a weird one, but nice to do that, I suppose, as nice as it can be with this kind of stuff.
Okay, now I want to actually get into your film. I want to get into my notes. You start off with beautiful sound. Like, this is a full production. I really didn't find it to be an amateur production, I want to say. I would say you went in guns a-blazing. Like, the sound guy seemed to know what he was doing. Camera guy needed to do it. The production design was wonderful. So, who's the sound guy? Tell me about him, or is it you?
Yeah! No, please. I wish that I could do all those things, but I'm not that egocentric. I'm egocentric enough. But, no, I wanted to bring in... All the people that worked on this are people that I've known and worked with before. So for me, it was a great collaboration of bringing people in that, for me, are like amazing in their very specific niche. And they're hungry because we're all kind of at a similar level where we're kind of coming up together. And so the sound guy, who was the designer and composer, is a guy called Howard Carter. Howard's amazing. I've known him for years. He's done a lot of audiobooks for Doctor Who. Okay. Here in the UK. He did the sound on the books, okay. Like the sound effects and the scores on all these Doctor Who.
Oh, wow. So he's
audio.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an awesome kind of gig. And he's amazing. Like, he blasts out the score in a couple of weeks. You know, he plays piano, all these different kind of instruments. He's got his own studio in London. And he just... jammed out, kind of, you know, these amazing little riffs and medleys, and got the tone and the theme down so amazingly well. He's incredible. And then our cinematographer, who captured all those amazing shots that you just called out, is a guy called Adam Lyons, who is a friend of mine and a collaborator. We've worked on projects in the past, and yeah, you know, I'm so glad you called the shots out as well, because he's, for me, a genius cinematographer.
I'm calling them out because I loved it. This to me doesn't seem like a short. Like, this should be a feature. Like, the shot, seems very high worth from what I'm used to watching in amateur film, indie film, or I should rephrase that. Like, even the opening shot of that men's club, I want to know what that is. I mean, that was a really nice location.
Yeah, I mean, we got two locations. It was a church, and it was kind of like a cafe bar, but it's more than a typical cafe. It's got a bit of a slightly upmarket feel to it, but that's it. Like, two locations, that's all we had to play with. The church, obviously, where we have the opening shot in, has a lot more to play with, but still, that alone doesn't do justice to what he made, because in person, that church looks okay, but he's really heightened it into something more, giving it a tone and a mood that really lends itself to the script. And yeah, you know, it's production-wise, it is at a slightly higher level because of all these people who just came together and helped to make it what it was. And yes, he's, as I say again, I use the word genius, I don't mean to use it lightly. He helped take the story on the script and my vision for the tone, but to execute it in a way where the shots are very thought out. You know, he worked with our director on this very closely. The shots were picked very intentionally in terms of how they helped to tell the story. And, you know, all those little moments are done with deliberation. The space between the characters is meant for a reason. And that kind of gap between the two of them becomes less and less as they get closer in frame as the story progresses to reflect their closeness in the actual narrative. The same with how he plays with light and shadow. You know, my character is more in darkness and shadow because he's processing this whole thing in a different way. The main character, the older father, and Henry, is slightly more in light because his journey is a bit more pure. All of these thoughts have gone in his head, and then he's made it visually stand out that way. So, Yeah, massive props to him. I could go on forever. You'll have to cut me off because I'll keep waxing lyrical.
Props to you. I mean, I'm listening to what you're saying. I did notice they were getting closer, but I didn't clue in until you told me why. I'm like, they get to know each other. Never thought of it. Genius. I didn't see it until you told me. That's genius.
It's genius. And I'm giving him, like, you know, the spiel from an overall perspective, but I would have never thought of that as an actor principally. So to then see him come with his craft, which he's owning so beautifully, and to do that, it's like, okay, yes, this is exactly how I wanted this. People who are at the top of their game in their particular wheelhouse. And yeah, he brought it massively.
How did you find this men's club? Like, is like, where did you just sort of say, can I borrow this cafe, or?
Kind of. I mean, yeah, I had to pay for a few of the locations, right? But it's not out of this world in terms of what you sometimes have to put up for certain locations. It was just a bit of scouting. But, you know, I'm in a city in the north of England where we filmed this, and it's not that it's easy, but it's a little bit more flexible to go to people and say, hey, I'm making this film. This is what it's about. Here's a context on who we are. Are you happy to chat? And the idea of making a film is a bit more novel to them. So that kind of goes in our favor a little bit with locations. But it's just this perfect, quaint little church in the center of the city. And it just fit really, really well. The kind of men's club / kind of cafe area, we kind of scouted out a few options around the town. That was a typical production thing where it's available, we can get it, it fits, we've scouted it out. A few challenges with the location from a production perspective, but nothing we can't work around. And again, the cinematographer and director and editor, you know, pulled a few magic tricks out of the bag to make it look as good as it does in the end.
Well, it looks amazing. I'm never going to take that away from this film. I was so impressed by the look of this film. Very slick.
Like I said,
I was very thing. So, I guess I want to go back to that night. Did you guys have a beer or anything there? Because, I mean, it looks like a really nice place. I wanted to go there.
Yeah, right. I think that would have been an awful idea because we were literally trying to keep up production. But, it is a nice, chilled lounge place. So they specialize in like, whiskey and gin tasting.
Oh, see,
so it's probably more that kind of place.
You got to go have one then.
Yeah, right. Well, now we've done with the film and we're kind of a little bit, not foot off the gas, but in a different stage. It's more of a, let's go and maybe screen it there and have a little relaxing whiskey tasting session, right?
100%. So what are your plans for the film? What are you doing with the film? Where's the film going?
Yeah, we're in the middle of its festival run and awards push at the moment. So we had our North American premiere back in beginning of August now at the LA International Short Film Festival, which is a great festival. So a bunch of us went out there for that. And
oh, so you went to LA then? Hold on.
We were out in LA for that.
So how was LA? Because, I mean, you're from England. It's a little different, LA. It's bright and sunny.
Right. Well, I mean, I've been to LA loads of times.
Okay.
I have relatives there. So for me, it's not a culture shock. And the cinematographer and his partner came with me. They've been before. So we're used to it. We kind of go every so often. We've broken into it. But we like it, you know, it's nice. The industry's kind of there. I say kind of because it's global now, but
I disagree with you. I still think it's LA is the place to be.
It's the place to be, but compared to how it was maybe a decade ago, less.
Well, the internet's done that for you guys. I mean, we wouldn't have been speaking now. I mean, I do say it's a global mean, but I think if you make it, you got to go to Hollywood.
I think you have to at least be able to access it and dip your toe in and go there on a regular basis, if not live there permanently.
Okay,
well, I think, but it's all happening there.
Okay, well, you're from England. I mean,
yeah.
And I mean, the English do have a big film industry.
Yeah.
And I mean, did you show your film over there, I hope, somewhere?
We have. We've had some private screenings over here, and we've actually just been accepted into our first UK festival called the London Liftoff Festival, and that's at the beginning of December. So, yeah, we're starting to get a bit of traction over in the UK and in Europe. If I'm honest, the US has picked up on the film a lot quicker and with maybe more open arms. Alongside LA, we screened at DC Shorts. So those are two pretty huge, prestigious short film festivals in the north of America. And yeah, it's been more readily received out there so far, but we're starting to get traction here, which is nice.
That's great to hear. That's so. Do you like to travel with the film? I mean, you've gone to LA, so I guess you're going to go to the other short film in London in December.
Yeah, when we can. I mean, look, within the UK, it's easy to travel around, so I think we're definitely going to try and go around for the UK and European ones where we can. And yeah, that's part of the beauty, right? To get to screen the project with a live audience and get the real reactions from people in person, because that's also in a weird, voyeuristic way, kind of nice.
That's awesome. Did you have a Q&A at LA?
We had a brief Q&A at the end where they asked standard kind of questions. And again, first question for me was, how did you find out about this? So yes. It's a standard thing.
Well, you led me with that, which was good, because I did have that good thing. Have you had any strange questions? Like, did you discuss the stance and all that kind of stuff, or...?
Nothing really that strange. It was only a couple. I think it was myself and another filmmaker in the program that were up there for the Q&A. And no, it was pretty much that was the main thing. And then, yeah, like, what were the plans for the project moving forward, really? Which at that stage was hard to say because that was our first festival. But since then, it's kind of materialized as I'd answered her, which was, you know, all the festivals that we're hitting at the moment. And I guess beyond that, you know, a lot of people, she asked me, you know, is this a feature in the making? You've kind of alluded to it as well. I think my honest answer is, yes, there is a feature film story in this, because the challenge with this film was try to find, like, a little window of the overall story that you can make as a short. There's so many parts to this that I could have pinpointed. I've just pinpointed a specific moment in time, which lends itself to a short, but there's a feature narrative in there potentially. It was never the intention to make a feature, nor to make a short film as a springboard for a feature. So I think step one is we just want to enjoy the short film fully, really get it out there, enjoy the festival and awards push with it. Once the dust has settled there, I'd like to think that we can definitely explore the feature film side of things, because that's an interesting avenue to look at. There's so much more to the story that I'd like to explore.
So where did you find your other lead for the film, the older man?
Oh, man, yeah. Mitchell Mullen's the name of that actor. He's amazing. He's actually my acting teacher. yeah, right? It's the perfect thing. Like, all these people, I know them. It was such a blessing to work with him, because you're crossing that kind of imaginary divide, right, where here's this guy who for 3-4 years it was my acting coach in London, and you know, there's this almost reverence in some ways, not in a kind of weird way, just in a he's taught me so much, and for me it was a no-brainer. He was perfect for the character. Before he even read a script, before I even written a damn script, he'd accepted to do it, which to me was
wow. He
was a little crazy, but also a beautiful, like, sign of trust, I guess, right? So I'm glad that we managed to pull off what we did, otherwise this trust might have been misplaced. But he's incredible. You know, he's the kind of actor you will have seen his face, but you won't know where. He's just in so many things. He's been in so many huge, you know, like, studio movies and TV shows. And he's currently in the West End now doing a live performance of The Exorcist.
Oh, wow.
Which is incredible. That's his West End debut.
Hold on, there's a play of The Exorcist?
Yeah, they're doing a play version of The Exorcist. It's amazing. They did, like, a regional run in the UK.
Oh, wow.
And they got picked up for the West End. They just started about a month ago. They're running until the beginning of March.
That's awesome. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I've got to go see it. It sounds like it's getting some amazing reviews. So he's a great actor, and you know, to work with him over this shoot was, again, such a blessing. He's got a great way of working, so open, so free and fluid, and just brought the character to life and had little things he picked up in the script that I almost hadn't quite tweaked onto, you know, like his character, he's got this cough, he's a bit, you know, he's got his ailments, he's not in the healthiest state, without giving too much away.
No, you're good, because I have that written down in my note, is the man sick.
Yeah, he's sick, right? But it wasn't when I wrote it necessarily something that he was aware of as being as severe as it was. You know, we kind of wrote it as he's got this kind of cold maybe, and then what happens is a bit kind of out of the blue for him. But Mitch came and said, no, what if he knows? And it totally flipped it, and it's so much more powerful. And that small note fueled his performance, I think, at a much deeper level than maybe anything I could have planned as my kind of, you know, guy with a writer's hat on. And those small choices, it's so obvious coming from someone with that much experience who's so innately talented. Like, those are the things that just enrich the entire process. And yeah, again, another one that I could wax lyrical about forever. So, you know, stop me whenever you feel.
No,
like
you're all good. I want to go back to the Mitch. I think for the ending, which we're not going to ruin, I'll be good. I think he made the right choice. I think I like the ending that way.
Thank you. What is it about that that you find so endearing? Because we've had people give different kind of takes on it.
Why do I find it endearing? Because it works for me. I think for the script, it made sense. He had a release at the end. Does that make – I don't want to ruin –
I totally get you, and I love that you said that because I think it's kind of a – it could be a glass half empty or a glass half full ending.
And I think the main character has a release too, because I think he's had that thought his whole life, because he comments on it, that it happened to him before.
Exactly. And it's grounded in some truth and reality, because the truth of the actual scandal is it's not always like happy fairy tale, very clear cut Hollywood rainbows ending, you know? It's crunchier than that. Real life has gray areas. And
so true.
You know what I mean? Like, the fact is, even in the real places of the research I've done where people have come back together after decades, that doesn't mean that it's happy families. Many of them maybe do have it like that for a while, but then real life kicks in and it's still developing a relationship with effectively a stranger. That biological bond is there, but it's almost – it's not meaningless, but you have to build that foundation from the get-go, and there's so much baggage with that. So, you know, we didn't want to do a disservice to that, because I think to just be, happy families with it would be unrealistic. And
absolutely.
So yes, so glad you said that, and I agree. For me, it is a positive ending, but it's very – you have to wade through the kind of, you know, the shrubs and the bushes a little bit to see that. It's very subtle, but I'm kind of ecstatic that you said that. You're the first person to say that so clear cut.
Sorry, I guess it's too many interviews and too many films.
No, but I like it. I'm like, yes, because a lot of people are like, oh, I would have preferred, like, if they would have had, you know, the Hollywood ending.
No,
but I get why
no,
you didn't.
I don't think that would have worked for this. I don't think it would have the impact.
Either. And the note that we had, I can't spoil it, but the way that it leads up to that ending and the decision with, you know, the characters' journeys, again, Adam, the cinematographer, had that idea. That came from him when I was writing and bouncing ideas off of him and the director. He came out and said, you know what? What if we did this? Because I feel like that's more – it's got more of a journey. There's more of an arc for both characters if you have that – finality, shall we say.
Is this the first short you've written, or have you written other shorts and filmed other shorts?
This is the first short I've written myself, kind of purely. I mean, I bounced it off of the guys and got their feedback, but this is the first one I've written. I worked with Adam on another short / TV pilot.
Right, you can't trust technology ever. So, apologies for that.
So, well, that's a good question then. Did you guys have any problems on the shoot?
Oh, wow. Great segue. I love it. Amazing segue. You know what? Nothing out of the ordinary, to be honest with you. I don't want to say it was smooth sailing, but it was as smooth as it can be on a film shoot. You know, we were constrained for time a little bit on some of the days, but we got everything we wanted with the shots. That's about the extent of it.
How long did it take you to shoot it?
We did it over 3.5 days.
That's pretty good. Oh, I did want to ask one question about your film teacher. Did you buy him a bottle of scotch?
I would have bought him a bottle of scotch if he still drank. He actually doesn't drink alcohol anymore, so he's fully sober. But we had a few meals, I think, so we made up for it that way.
That's good. I was just wondering. I go, he looks like a Scotch drinker to me, just in that place there.
That's what we gave his character a little bit of a kind of hip flask and a whiskey kind of Scotch kind of vibe going on, but yeah, that was all iced tea to play the.
I know, it's never the same. Yeah.
I know, right?
I'm always hoping you guys have a little bit more fun, but it never seems to happen. So
I think he's probably grateful with me for not putting in real alcohol, to be honest with you. So it all worked out well.
So where are you? You've done the short film. You're touring the short film. Are you working on something new?
At the moment, I'm in the very early stages of developing something with Adam again, the cinematographer. But, you know, it's not maybe at the stage yet where we're too sure of where we're going with it. It's more of a, have a bit of fun with a new short, something a bit more of an action-y thriller kind of vibe. We're not quite sure what it is yet, but early stages, I think we've just got over the sort of, I guess, creative withdrawals from this film. And now we're kind of looking at what's next. And then, you know, like I said, the feature, I think eventually is one to explore from my side. I'm keeping it in the back of my mind as I'm going through the entire process here.
I guess my question is, are you going to expand your cast, or are you going to keep it very small again, a very limited budget?
Wow, I've not thought that far ahead. I don't know budget-wise, but I feel like, you know what, I'd like to think that once we get a treatment and maybe a script together, we can be a little bit cavalier with this and try and get the kind of budget that it might deserve to do it at a slightly bigger scale, you know, because the story is inspired by a scandal that happened in Spain. I'd very much like to have a lot of it set there because it should pay homage to where the origins are from. And yeah, I'd like to get a bit more budget than the self-funding route that I went with, put it that way.
How did you self-fund? Was it Kickstarter or was it, I can't remember, the Indiegogo?
None of that with this one. I've used those in the past. I literally just self-funded through my own cash. So I put money aside and just started to fund. Yeah, well, it's a one-time deal, right? That's how I looked at it. It's an investment. And the reason I did it was I wanted to make the film on our time scales. I wanted to be able to do it with the freedom, I guess, that that gives you. And, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, even though you can't see me as a producer. If I'm putting in the money, I can kind of pull the strings at the tempo that I want. And that opened up more creative freedom and to be able to do it at the time frames, like I say, that we were ready to go at. I wasn't waiting for money to come in through a Kickstarter. As you probably know, doing a Kickstarter or any kind of crowdfunding, that's a pretty big mission in of itself. Like, that's a full-time gig. And let's maybe say I was impatient, or if I flip it, I think the story was ready to go, and I wanted to just go with it.
That's great. I think that's great. Well, I've asked you everything I can possibly ask you. If you have anything to add, this is a perfect time. If not, time for fun questions.
We've covered a lot of it, you know, so let's hit the fun questions.
The first one's really easy. Your favorite film?
Aside from mine? Wow, that was
you
an
can't
actor
have your
ego.
Own.
Actor
you...
ego kicked in there. It's
yes.
Oh, my God.
I love your film. Great. But it wouldn't be my favorite film, though.
I hear that. I hear that. There's so many. I think it's such a hard question to
give me three
answer,
then.
Really. I mean, I love a lot of the Nolan stuff, so, you know, you could definitely pick any of his.
Hold on. So we're picking Following, then? Following will count?
Well, it was a great film. I know the actress that was in that, Lucy Russell's, she used to be in my acting class. She's an amazing actress, so I would definitely pick Following to pay an homage to her.
I really love Following, so I'm fine with you picking Following.
It's a great film. And then his, you know, early stuff after that, like Memento, obviously no-brainer, genius film.
Okay. Let's go back to the, what about Interstellar? That's the one I kind of like, meh.
Sort of. I wasn't quite as meh about it, but I think coming hot off the heels of what he'd done at the time with, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy and Inception, it maybe wasn't as strong on the surface, but I can see what he's trying to do. Like, the themes he explores are always very, very bold, and I think Interstellar was maybe the next step in the journey from what he'd explored in the other films, you know, the kind of time, mind, reality, perception kind of themes that he goes after. Maybe it was a bit too much to bite off, but I was okay with it. I was okay with Interstellar.
Yeah, but see, I'd argue Dunkirk just blows it out of the water.
I think.
Because I saw Dunkirk on IMAX on opening night. It just blew me away.
Like it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it did its job. And I had to read more and go, those weren't real soldiers. They were painted scenery. I'm like, okay, they win. They fooled me to no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So they may have answered my next question, but this is everyone tells me it's a hard question. It's Friday night. You have some people over. What film do you put on for them?
Oh, wow. I've never even thought of that kind of question. It depends what mood we're in, I guess.
That's what I mean.
Probably go. So, you know what? Seven. Let's put out Seven because a lot of people haven't seen that movie. Let's get in a really kind of like, you know, I like the psychological thrillers. And again, you know, we're throwing Nolan out there. We're throwing Fincher. Oof. I could add like Denis Villeneuve into the mix. I love some of his work that he's coming out with at the moment. So anything for one of those guys. But I get a lot of people that come to me and say, I've not seen Seven. And I have to step back and say,
Seven?
I know that's the reaction. And the beautiful thing about Seven is it still holds up now. Even visually, you know, yeah, you could say, oh, it looks a bit dated. No, not really.
No.
That's all intentional.
Seven's not dated. It's a very fictional world.
Exactly.
Seven has a very corridor of its own. I wouldn't call Seven dated because, I mean, it looks like it's supposed to look.
Yeah, and the way that, you know, again, the way that Fincher uses the camera in all of his films to help tell story and take the audience on the journey.
You brought up Denis Villeneuve. Have you seen that Jake Gyllenhaal movie when he plays the double? I'm sorry, I forgot the name of it.
Enemy.
Hello?
Enemy?
Enemy, yes. What did you think of Enemy?
It's an interesting movie. I like it because I've looked at how they worked on it from a creative slash sort of actor-director perspective, the behind the scenes. I love the process and how they explain the freedom that they went in there because it sounds very improvisational and free, which as an actor is obviously a godsend. It's a very abstract film. It's hard to kind of wrap your head around, like, what's going on? What the hell does that ending really mean? Does it mean anything?
I've had people argue with me, and I really think the whole spider thing is him taking over the other guy's place. And he's weaving webs. That's what I said. That's the way I took it. Because my friend goes, well, it could take it many ways. I'm like, well, I take it that way that he's becoming that person, so he's going to weave new webs.
Okay.
And I said, that's a very weird way of looking at it. But to me, it was the most logical way of looking at it, that he's become the other person.
Oh, wow.
And
I've never thought of it like that.
And you could have a totally different, you know what I mean? It's one of those films that's just so bizarre to think of the ending. You just kind of go with it.
I don't know if you ask them if they even know themselves. That's the beauty of it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if they could give you an answer.
I don't think they can. I don't think there is an answer. That's why I like the film. It's very interesting. Like, Seven's kind of that way. What's in the box?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a very
line.
Similar.
That's the damn line. That's Brad Pitt's line, you know, like, what's in the box?
Yeah.
And, yeah, those movies are the ones I think you sound to be similar. I resonate with them. They don't spoon-feed everything to you.
But dude,
you have to think.
As an audience member, do we want to be spoon-fed? I don't.
Like, I guess it depends what mood you're in. I don't either, but sometimes, you know what? I don't mind, like, switching off my brain and having a slightly bigger, less, for lack of a better term, intellectual film to watch. Give me a superhero movie. I enjoy those, too. You know what I mean?
Hold on. Did you see Thor Ragnarok?
Not seen it yet, no.
It's a very fun film. I'm going to have to talk to you. Next time we speak, we'll speak about Thor Ragnarok. I'll try to remember. Just because I want your opinion. Because to me, Thor Ragnarok makes you think at times. Not a lot, because it's very comedy, but Tiki does a great job. Like, Hunt for the Wilderness People is a phenomenal film. I hope you've seen that one.
I've not seen that. I'm going to add it to my list.
Oh, you need to. Okay, watch Hunt for the Wilderness People before you see Thor Ragnarok. And then you'll get the humor for Thor Ragnarok. It's much more there.
Okay, homework. I've jotted down my homework.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, it's good. I like it. It's awesome.
I watch way too much film. I think my wife would say the same thing. I watch a lot of film and so do my friends. So that's why I always try to ask people for films I haven't seen. Oh, my final question is really easy. You go to the cinema, what do you order?
I'm really basic. Give me a nice, you know, popcorn, salted, never sweet, salted popcorn. And
Hang on, you add salt to it, or is it just straight over the counter?
It should be salted already, right? Don't add salt to it.
Well, we don't have salt. I don't think they put salt on here. Unless they do, I've never noticed.
Don't they? Okay.
No, well, not in Canada.
Maybe it's still over here. Yeah, you can still get the salted variety here. So salted for me. I'm not a fan of the cotton candy sugary version.
Hold on. Back this up. What's a cotton candy sugary version?
Well, you know, like you're saying, the popcorn that's just sweet popcorn.
See, no. I'm going to have to go to England to have popcorn because I don't know. When I go here, they pop it in the machine, I get a bag, and I'm good to go.
But how does it taste? Is it sweet or savory? Because you get the option over here.
I guess I don't know. They just add butter to mine. That's it.
Right. See, over here you get the option in a lot of places. It's do you want it the sweet or sugary kind of version, or do you want it sort of more savory, which is not really layered in butter. It's just salted, and it's already in the machine.
Oh, really? Very interesting. And what do you get to drink?
I'm really playing. I'd love to say like a soda or something crazy, but just a water. Just give me a water.
Now,
with all that salt, you got to stay hydrated, right?
Oh, I agree. I definitely be getting some water. Do you smuggle in food, by the way?
Occasionally, I might do. I'm going to one of the slightly kind of higher-end cinemas, you know, these ones that have popped up where it's more of like a lounge experience with like a couch and stuff.
No, we don't have those. Again, you're...
There's a few here that have cropped up where they're a bit more like, you know, you've got a couch and like a little side table, and it's more like you're watching the cinema. You're the theater, but it's like kind of being in your lounge. So it's a nice experience. You pay more for the theater ticket. But then, you know, if you're going to buy like food or drinks there, it's more expensive as well. So on occasion, you may smuggle something in. I don't think I'm the only one. You usually see a lot of people try and smuggle stuff in to counterbalance the price of the ticket, I guess.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, thank you for your time. I think your film's going to do very well for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad we finally managed to chat.
Yeah, it was all my bad. So you have a great night. I'm still going to enjoy the rest of my evening. It's getting late there, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, man. Take it easy.